Thanks, Gary. Thanks, worship team. Well, welcome, everybody. Hope you've had a great week. Mine has been awesome because I got a grandkid. So, yep, it's my first one. Yeah, you can celebrate. I've been celebrating. We've been having a lot of fun. Her name is Nova, and she has more hair than I have. But beautiful, God's creation, and get a little slice of heaven there. So we get to see her today. I get to see her right after service, so I will not go long. Like, wow, that's all it took is a grandkid? We are in week two of our Power of Connecting series, and today we're talking about taking an interest in others. And to start off, I thought we'd play a little game called How Well Do You Know Me? And what I've asked is I've asked two individuals to come up here to play against each other. They have not seen the questions or know what they are, but this is similar to kind of like the newlywed game. So I asked Steve and Lisa Peterson to come up, see if I can reassemble this while they come up. Yeah, give them a hand. So this is going to be the shorter one, because if you try to raise that, well, you'll just hold it in your hands, I guess. I think this one is kind of crummy, too. I picked the two crummiest stands I could find. All right. So what you're going to do is I'm going to ask a series of questions, and then you are going to write down your answer. So the other one can try and guess your answer. And then you're going to write down, of course, your own answer. So when yours is guessed, you've got it. Right? Simple. First question. Who is my oldest friend? So it doesn't have to be like age, like the oldest person, but your longest friend. Yeah, you can write on the other side of it. Yeah, then you can flip it around. Or you can write right on the same side. That's what Steve's doing. So your oldest friend. I've got a really old friend. That's 92, but he's not my oldest friend, if you know what I mean. All right. You got him? All right. Lisa, who is Steve's oldest friend?
Oh, boy. Senior moment.
It's all right. Scott. Correct answer is Scott. Very good. Oh, and that's your brother.
Yeah.
Oldest friend, Scott, brother. Oh, excellent. Okay, so who's Lisa's oldest friend?
Yeah, well,
huh, Vicky? And you put? Vicky, look at that. Good job. You each get a point. Nice. All right. Where is my favorite place to eat? Where is your favorite place to eat? We played this with Pastor Brian and Tarina in first service. Pastor Brian's was easy. Tarina couldn't figure out where her favorite place was. Brian said he knew. So she defaulted to him. All right. You got one for Steve?
Yeah.
All right. Steve's is Panda Express. Steve, what'd you put down? You were trying to write that? You got the P down.
I was trying to write Panda.
Panda Express. Good job. Okay. And so Where do you think Lisa's favorite place to eat is?
Kowloon?
Close.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Sanaa's. That's Mediterranean, right? Yeah.
I never go there.
Yeah. Yeah, so you wouldn't know, right? All right, next one. What is the name of my first pet? Your very first pet. We had a little poodle, black poodle. His name was Pepper. No, your first pet. Your first pet. Could be a rock. I don't know. I had a little poodle named Pepper. And the Pepper was, well, very loved by the family. And if you know my dad, though, my dad has some weird obsession with chapstick. And Pepper would steal his chapstick, jump up on the bed, and eat it. Whole sticks of chapstick, which wasn't good for the bedspread. Or for what the dog did after trying to digest a whole stick of chapstick. So, all right, what'd you put? What's Steve's first pet? What was the name of his first pet? Buffy? Buffy, what was it?
A little dog.
Just a little dog.
Carrier mutt.
Okay. Something like that. You just said Shih Tzu in church. Okay. Steve, what is Lisa's? Yeah, no, I know. Okay, here we go. So, Steve, what is Lisa's favorite or first name or first pet? Boy, you got me really off now. Charlie? Charlie? No Charlie? Winnie. Well, what was Winnie?
That was the dog when we first got married. That was my very first little pet.
Right. But what was Charlie?
I have no idea.
Forget Charlie. She doesn't either. This is interesting. We should explore this.
Sugar, that's cool.
That's kind of like Charlie. Could have been another girlfriend you had. Should we just stay here a while? I'm enjoying this. All right, next question. What is my favorite holiday? What is your favorite holiday? Brian couldn't narrow this one down for Tarina, so he just said all of them. All right, here we go. What is Steve's favorite holiday?
Easter?
I was going to put Easter because that is my favorite holiday, but I thought you would guess Christmas.
Oh, you're trying to do the old...
He didn't think
you really knew him. All right, what about Lisa? Christmas. There you go. Good job. All right, what is my shoe size? What is my shoe size? Steve, you're going to have to, like, factor in that she might be lying, what that lie might be. All right, Lisa, what is Steve's shoe size?
10.
10?
Yeah, close, 10 and a half.
10 and a half. Oh, yeah, they flatten out a little. Yeah, I can see. Yeah, I can see. Yeah. All right, this is your time for revenge. You want to rewrite your answer?
What? Oh, it was 10 when I was 10.
All right, what is Lisa's shoe size? 7?
8.
Oh, hardly even a size.
Yeah, I went with the less risky one.
All right, good choice. Okay, last question. What is my favorite comedy movie? Favorite comedy movie? Mine, by the way, is Tommy Boy. If you have not seen that, I encourage you to watch the Holy Schnikey edition. It's good. You only can pick one. You can't pick all the holidays. All right, Lisa, what is Steve's favorite comedy movie? Dumb and Dumber. It's a great one. Steve? Oh, Christmas Vacation, another excellent one.
That's
yes.
Mine.
Good. Oh, and well, he didn't. What'd you put for her? Christmas Vacation. Very nice. Give him a hand. Thanks for playing. I lost track of who the winner was after we went through the pet names. That kind of threw me off. How well would you have done, you know, with, you know, your significant other or your best friend or whoever it might be, you know, how well do we know each other? And how much of an interest do we take in each other to know these certain things about us? Last week, we looked at both the value and the significance of meeting new people and how that is the beginnings of meeting your next best friend or meeting that next significant person in your life. And that these things happen best in face-to-face, in-person interactions. It's not that social media doesn't have a place. It's not that social media is the evil of all evils. It can enhance many of your relationships and connections, but it can't be the place where these connections happen. They really have to happen face-to-face and with one another. So once you make that connection, though, you need to take the next step with it and have another encounter to, you know, further develop that relationship. And it's not always easy to get that second encounter with someone, especially if you're not wanting to come across creepy or stalkish, you know. As you meet someone you kind of like, but then you're trying to figure out a way that you can meet them again or connect with them again. How do you go about doing this? We challenge you this week to meet some new people. And how many of you, as a result of the message, did meet at least one person over this last week? Well, very good. How many met two people? Three? Four? Five? Six? Holy smokes, great job. Lisa, good job. How many total, Lisa?
15.
Holy smokes. I didn't even get all six. I might put some of mine on yours. Yeah. It's hard to do when you try to make a connection where you actually get to know someone's name. But I don't want you to just stop with this week. I want you to continue doing it or continue striving to do this, because this is how you're going to meet people that can be significant relationships for you in the future. But it is not going to happen if you don't meet them. And it's a challenge in our culture today to figure out how to do it. So if you missed last week's message, it's online. You can listen to that. Some great ideas on how to connect with people in this way. But we need to return or have that follow-up connection with someone so that we can grow even deeper in these relationships. Sometimes when we meet someone, it's important if we can meet them in a place that we know they go back to and that we can go back to, because then it can be very natural. Sometimes you meet someone in a place that it is not a natural place to meet again, or it's just not realistic that they would be back there or that you would be back at that place. And in those times, sometimes when I really feel like, yeah, this is a relationship that seems like it could really work, I will try my best to, find out something about them that creates an additional spot down the line where we can get together. Maybe it's an event that they're going to, or maybe sometimes even it's a need that they might have, and I realize I can meet that need. I remember one person, we were talking, and we ended up talking about Jeeps, and he had some issue with his Jeep, and I said, I just did that to my Jeep. I said, hey, this is really weird, but like, if you've got time this next week or 2 weeks, come on over and we can do it together. I've got the tools for it and whatnot. And that's how you can kind of build friendships, is through things like that. And even those second encounters can be even a little bit more of an intimate environment in the aspect that, like, they're at your place or you might be at their place, or at least a place that you both have agreed to. But maybe you have a skill set, something that you can offer someone. And in that initial meeting, if you feel like things are connecting, how can you offer something to them in the process, where it's valuable to them, that can help build that second connection with them. One of the best ways that we can ensure that a second connection happens and ensure that that second connection is, goes well, that encounter goes well, is to take an interest in the other person. And that's our focus for today. That's the title of the message, is that taking this interest in that other person. So many times when you meet someone, they talk a lot about themselves. Now, people who do this get a bad rap. I don't want you to, like, even beat them up over it, because people talk about themselves because in a new encounter with someone, that's the person they know is themselves. And so they'll start to talk about themselves and forget that they're not really asking you questions or finding out things about you. It can be rude. It is rude. At the same point, sometimes people are just so nervous in a conversation, they don't know what to do. They end up talking a lot about themselves. And if you're giving them polite verbal cues, like nodding your head and whatnot, it just encourages them to continue to do that. The thing is that to make a real connection with someone, we need to do our best to try not to do that ourselves, but actually try to get them to do that. Because when you're able to talk to someone, ask them questions about themselves, take an interest in them, interestingly, those people start to take an interest in you. Because it's very rare for you to get into a conversation or meet someone and that person start asking appropriate and healthy questions about you. You know, like, what do you do for a living? Like, they're kind of exploring you. Not like they're, interviewing you in some way, but just general kinds of questions. Because people don't do that as often as they should when they first meet someone. And so when you take an interest in them, they're able to then share about their lives, but at the same point, they remember that, and they start to take more of an interest in you. In fact, that's your first fill-in for today. Take an interest in others, and they will take an interest in you. Like, when you ask someone about themselves, it confirms to them that you already like them. Because a lot of people, when we meet, people are wondering, like, do you like me? Does this person like me? Especially a second encounter. Let's say you just happen to meet up a second time, you strike up a conversation, or they come to you and strike up a conversation. They might be wondering, like, am I instigating this, or does this person want to, like, be a friend of mine, or do they want to connect? And when you immediately are asking about them, it tells that person, yes, they do want to know about me. They do like me in some way, shape, or form. And so it's easy for them to share about their lives with you. It also will make them feel like they matter because you're taking an interest in them and you're asking about them. It makes them feel like their life is worth hearing or there's something about them worth listening to since you're asking about it. It also helps people not feel like they're bragging. Sometimes when people are talking about themselves, it feels like they're, you know, self-promoting or they're bragging about their lives. Like if you come and talk to me right now, I'm going to dominate the conversation and tell you all about my grandkid. And I think my grandkid is better than your grandkid. But that's just where I'm at right now. I'm sure I won't feel that way tomorrow, but I feel that way today. I'll probably feel that way tomorrow. But see, over time, like if that was how all our interactions were, that wouldn't be so good. But at the same point, if you were trying to connect with me, you could come up to me and you could ask about my grandkid and I will just go on and on and on. It's like you just like put the quarter in and I will just run with that, like the Energizer Bunny. But when you ask someone about them, it makes them feel like you're interested, like you care, and what they say matters. And it makes them not feel like they're bragging or self-promoting because you have asked for it, and so now they are providing whatever it is that you have asked for about their lives. It leaves a very strong impression with people. Just like when you meet someone and they only talk about themselves without you asking about them, that can leave a strong impression. It will leave a strong impression on someone else when you ask them about them. They'll remember that. Because again, it's just not real common. It's rare in our culture today. I think conversations are a lot easier when we do this too. If you're wondering what to talk about with someone that you're just meeting, asking them about them is a great way to have a conversation because they'll just run with that conversation. They know about themselves and they'll tell you the things that they're interested in you knowing and that they think are interesting about their lives. It also clues you in on things that they think are interesting for further conversation or further questions that you might have. I think people that are introverted, if they don't know this technique, they should definitely learn this technique. A lot of people don't realize that I am an introvert. And it is sometimes very difficult for me to have a chatty conversation when I'm tired or when I'm worn down for whatever reason. And I worry that, you know, the conversation isn't going to go real well if a lot of the weight is on me. But when I ask people questions about themselves, for the most part, they will really talk about that. And for an introvert, it's great because people will walk away from that conversation. They'll say, man, that was a great conversation. And the introvert will say, yeah, I said like three words, but great for me too. But they can still feel like they're connecting with you in moments like that. So these are great approaches to use. I'll give you a little bit of advice on a few ideas of things that you could do in conversations like this. We can always ask each other questions like, tell me something about yourself. It's a very open-ended question. In fact, when you're asking questions in a new relationship, you want to ask open-ended questions and not closed in. In other words, you don't want the question to be able to be answered with yes or no. That can just be a conversation killer because you've gone through all this effort of thinking up and asking a question and you asked it, you know, yes or no, like, do you like it here? And they'll be like, yep. And you're like, dang, you know. But you could ask it just like, what is it that you like about this place? Or tell me something you like or don't like about this place. And then it's no longer closed-ended, it's open-ended, and then they can share a little bit more. So asking something like, tell me about yourself, opens a door for them to tell you what they're interested in or what their interests are, and gives you ideas of things to talk about. You can also ask questions like, what did you do this weekend? It's a great one that I hear people even use here at Hillcrest. As you're meeting new people, you can always ask, what did you do this weekend? Everybody did something. And a lot of people will say, we really didn't do anything this weekend. All we did was, and they tell you all the stuff they did. Like, they're thinking, like, we didn't go to Disney World, you know, so we didn't do anything. But they'll talk about, yeah, we had to paint this, you know, spare bedroom because so-and-so is coming to visit. And they end up telling you about their lives. In fact, sometimes even more intimate details. But it's great to be able to share back and forth on simple things like what is it you're doing or they're doing on the weekend. Makes it easy for you to reply to that as well. You can also ask people questions like, what kinds of activities are you in? What kind of things are you a part of? and allows people to talk about, you know, it's open-ended, so they can talk about hobbies that they're a part of, interests that they have, sporting events or sport teams that they like to follow. They'll even tell you about relationships that are meaningful, you know, like what kind of activities are you into? And I'll tell you, being a grandpa, you know. But it will reveal details about that person that can be for further conversation or for further interactions with them. Just kind of remember some of those things, bring those up again. I also kind of like to ask a question when I feel like the relationship is starting off well and I want to dig just a tiny bit deeper in the relationship. I'll usually ask something like, hey, here's a weird question for you. If you didn't live here or you didn't work here, where would you live or where would you work? It allows someone to kind of dream. Like, they might tell you about the beach or why they like the beach or some other place. They might tell you things they don't like about this place, or they might say, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. I love it here. They'll tell you why. So you can get a little bit deeper in conversation, but it's still safe because they can offer what they want to offer, what they feel comfortable offering. And it's good to think of some of these questions ahead of time, so when you're meeting with them, you can kind of quickly, you know, have these interactions. Now, the Apostle Paul gives this exact same instruction to us. And that's why these things that we're talking about are very important. They may seem like, well, it's just social interactions with people, but it is a lost art in our day today. And secondly, it is important as followers of Christ that we do these things with one another and with other people as well. In Philippians 2:4, Paul says this. He says, don't look out only for your own interest, but take an interest in others too. We need to be a kind of people, followers of Christ, are people that don't just take interest in ourselves, but we take interest in others. And Paul gets this from Jesus himself, Jesus' own teaching, again and again throughout the New Testament. In fact, throughout the entire Bible, there's this idea of taking an interest in other people and not just an interest in yourself. You see, God made all of us. The Bible teaches that he made every single person. And the stories in the Bible also point to the fact that God has very little tolerance for people in his creation that are unwilling or not willing to love others in his creation. And I get it, it's not easy. In fact, it can just seem downright impossible in some ways. But he asks us to love each other, all of the other people that he created. And to help us understand this, Jesus made this idea of taking interest in others as personal as he could. And so his teaching in Matthew 22, verse 39, he says, love your neighbor as yourself. Love God, love others. And somebody said, well, who are the others? Who are my neighbors? And then Jesus went on to tell the Good Samaritan story. But this idea of, you know, your neighbor is the people around you. And the way that you know how you're loving your neighbor is love your neighbor as you would want to be treated, as you would want to be loved. Treat others the way you want to be treated. Whether they do right or they do wrong, treat them in that the way you would want to be treated if you did something right or did something wrong. I mean, this alone would solve so many problems and really help us in our relationships with one another if we could have this kind of grace and forgiveness and openness with each other. But we do a really good job of loving ourselves. I think that's why, you know, Jesus kind of taps into this. Like, yes, we care about ourselves, maybe too much at times, but in that, the idea of how we care about ourselves, we should care for others in this same way. We make a connection with someone, we build that friendship, it's going to require some kind of sacrifice. And that's certainly what happens in something like this. Loving someone as you love yourself requires sacrifice. You have to let go of something, a value of yourself, taking care of your own need for the sake of taking care of the need of someone else. Kind of like that, you know, give the shirt off your back for someone else. Helping someone else that's in need, even though you may have some need of your own. These are common things in the scriptures. They're part of being a follower of Christ, but they should be represented in our relationships with one another too. Last week, I introduced two guys to you in the scriptures, David and Jonathan. And they are two friends that seem to be very unlikely to be best of friends in the scriptures. David was this shepherd who was really a nobody, but God said that David would become the king of Israel. Israel already had a king. His name was Saul. And he was very kingly, handsome, tall, powerful. And people feared him because of the way that he ruled as a king. And he wasn't very loving. He wasn't about loving others kind of idea as he loves himself. He really enjoyed the power of the throne. But because of that, God was going to take him off the throne and put David on. But you see, Saul also had a son, a prince, that when Saul passed away or left the throne for whatever reason, his son, Jonathan, would take the throne. But Jonathan and David became the best of friends, which is so unlikely because Jonathan had to sacrifice his right to the throne, his role as prince, and allow David to do the thing that God had called him to do to the throne. And this just is not the way that people play things out in life today. We don't see people willing to sacrifice something that they have the right to for the sake of someone else who they see has potential or has the ability or should have the opportunity to do something like that. I think it takes a special person to see something in someone else that causes you to set aside your right or your opportunity for that other person. I mean, I think maybe you see this like a parent with a child, probably. Maybe sometimes a child to a parent. But who turns down a promotion because there's a more qualified person at work? Can you imagine what your boss might say if they came to you, offered a promotion? You're like, oh, no, don't give it to me. Give it to Bob. He's more qualified than I am. It just does not happen in our world today. You know, who turns down a raise so it can go to someone else? Who gives credit to the support staff or another person instead of taking that credit for themselves? Well, the scriptures would say that followers of Jesus should be those kinds of people. Those should be markers of who we are. King Saul, like I said, was not living by this rule. He was not living by the rule of love others as yourself. Saul wanted his son, the prince, Jonathan, to take the throne. So the best way to do that for Saul was to eliminate the threat to the throne, which was David. So this is what Saul says to his son in Samuel chapter 20, verse 31. He said, as long as that son of Jesse is alive, you'll never be king. Now go and get him so that I can kill him. Just straightforward. Like this afternoon, this is what we're doing. We're going to go get David. You bring him to me. I'm going to kill him. And that way he won't take the throne and it will be yours because you're never going to be king as long as Jesse's around because God said Jesse's going to be the king. People are believing this stuff, so let's eliminate him. Boy, it just seems like as bad as that advice is, that's just the way these stories turn out. You know, where they just take them out and take power. But you see, Jonathan believed in David. He believed in what God had told David and what God wanted to do in and through David. And so as a result of this belief, instead of trying to destroy him, he decided to acknowledge what God was doing in David. And sometimes when we're reading this story, we skip right over these verses, but I want to pause long enough today for you to understand the significance of these next words that Samuel says or that's told of Samuel's story with, Jonathan's story with David. It says in 1 Samuel 13, 8 through 4, it says, and Jonathan made a solemn pact with David. So this is a commitment, a promise, a covenant with him. And he did this because he loved him as he loved himself. So already Jonathan is loving David as he loves himself. Jesus hasn't even come on the scene yet to talk about this, but yet Jonathan is living this out. He's loving David as he loves himself. And the evidence are the next words. Jonathan sealed the pact by taking off his robe and giving it to David, together with his tunic, sword, bow, and belt. This is not a wardrobe exchange. These items that are listed are the items, each one significant in the role that a prince would have and the power that a prince would have to the future throne that he would be prince to. And so each one of these items is a symbolic way of taking off, literally off of himself, and placing upon David this ability, this right, this authority to the throne. Like if Saul would have seen this event take place, this would have been horrific for Saul. But for Jonathan, this was so important in his relationship with David, acknowledging what God was up to and letting go of what should have been his, could have been his, might have been his, for the sake of his friend David. When we look at this verse, where have you sacrificed for a friend? You think of your relationships, spouse or, you know, friends, family members, wherever they might be in your world. Do you have a friend in your life that you're willing to sacrifice for, to give up something that you want or something that you have a right to for them? It's a real challenge. It could be as simple as giving up your Saturday for a friend who's asking you to help move, right? My goodness, you ask that in a group of people, watch people scatter, right? You will know who your friends are by who shows up to help you move. Yeah, it's giving up your time, your freedom, your whatever for the sake of a friend who needs some help. Or how about, you know, a friend who is miserable for whatever reason, and they just need your presence sitting with them in their misery. Those are hard moments to be around someone, especially when they're miserable and they want to take it out on you in some way. But to be the kind of friend that would give up for the sake of someone who's hurting and sit there in the midst of that pain when they could be doing 1,000 other things, it's a mark of real friendship. You know, sometimes we have people in our lives that struggle with addictions. And it's so easy to write those people off, but a real friend would stick with them with proper boundaries. And you have to learn what those boundaries are with someone with addictions, but again and again to be there for them in the midst of the struggle that they go through. To give up what we have for the sake of others. In fact, your last fill-in for today is that friends sacrifice for friends. Friends give up for a friend. Friends give up what they could have for that friendship. Friendships that are really meaningful are friendships that both sacrifice for each other, that both give up what they want, give up what they could have for the sake of the other person. Just like we see here with Jonathan and with David, the sacrifice for each other. In fact, Jesus said it as powerfully as I think it could be said, definitely summing up this whole idea. In John 15:13, he said, "There is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends." This is the greatest act. And so laying down your life, true, you're probably not going to have to lay down your life for one of your friends. Very few of us would ever find ourselves in that situation. But would you be willing to give up that Saturday to help them move? Because that may feel like laying down your life, depending on what it is. You know, you show up to, you know, don't you love that too, right? The friend says, "Can you help me move?" You show up at the house and not one thing's in a box. You're like, boy, you're really testing this friendship, aren't you? And you stick with it and you help them because they are overwhelmed. They need someone that will stick with them. And you do. Do you have friends like this? I need friends like this. You might think, oh, Pastor, you got to be flush with friends like this. Friends like this are not easy to come by, but I do have those in my life that would fit this bill. I have people that I could call at any time of day that would be there if I asked them. And the same thing, if they called and they asked for me, I would be there for them. That I would do anything in my power to meet whatever that need was. I should be that for more people. Because if I was that for more people would be that for me. We need these kinds of relationships. We need to be willing to go deep. We need to be willing to have significant friends. And in order to have significant friends, you've got to be willing to sacrifice for them. And that has got to play out in that relationship. And if it doesn't, then it's just the same as every other relationship that really is self-focused and selfish in many ways. It's what do I get out of the relationship instead of what can I give of myself in this relationship. You don't want it to be abusive. It goes both ways. But boy, when you find someone in your life that you're willing to sacrifice for and they're willing to sacrifice for, you mark those down because those are rare. And those will stand the test of time. Maybe it's not normal to have these kinds, many of these kinds of friends. But I don't think it should be nearly as scarce as it is in our lives. Because we need to be this way for each other. And when we are, people will be that way to us. And maybe this is why the golden rule exists in the first place. You know, the do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I mean, maybe that's why this exists, because it's a simple idea, but it's also really a complex idea, doing unto others as you'd have them do unto you. But I believe that this idea could solve all the places in this world where hate and brokenness have ruled the day. It could really be the key that would unlock a friendship for you that is meaningful and lasts through the good and the bad of your life and theirs. Because when you and I take an interest in others, we give up the need to have our interest be known. We give up the need to have people recognize us and to think that we're something or that we're important or valuable in some way. We no longer fight for that kind of recognition. We no longer have to fight for acceptance as we focus on giving recognition and acceptance to others. And mysteriously, this is the mystery of all of this. That when you give up the right to be noticed, when you give up the right to be accepted, people in turn will notice you and accept you. The thing that you want comes the exact opposite way that you think that it should. Because this is how God designed it, and this is how these relationships grow healthy. And if we don't develop friendships like this, and it becomes about us and what do we get out of it, then we continue with the same shallow and selfish relationships that seem all too common in our world today. Because when you take an interest in others, others will take an interest in you. As we move forward in this, Pastor Brian in the announcement time talked about an event coming up on September 8th. September 8th is our church picnic in which, it's true, we're going to have a beanbag tournament and we have to figure out how to beat Pastor Brian somehow in that tournament. But it's where we get together and we have a good time. We eat food, we play beanbags, we talk Christian smack to one another as if that's possible. We've figured out a way. We enjoy it. We have a lot of fun together. But that thing, as big as that event is for that day, that is completely secondary to the event that I want to encourage you to on that day. And that is on September 8th, we're going to have something that we're calling Save a Seat Sunday. And Save a Seat Sunday is a Sunday in which we're encouraging you, in the relationships that you have and the relationships that you're building, to invite someone to church. The data says that the majority of people that are looking to go to church, which is a high percentage of people that aren't going to church, but 60% are not going for the sole reason of they don't know where to go, they don't know if they walked into a place if they would be accepted, and they don't have anyone to go with. 60%, meaning that there is a large portion of people not going to church that will go if we just said, hey, do you want to go? You can go with me. I'm going to the 9 o'clock. I'm going to the 10:30 or whatever it is, and they come. It's not the idea of going to church for the sake of going to church, but what happens is, as I said last week, that the church can be one of these places where connections can happen differently than they can happen even at work, because there's not a boss and other coworker relationships. Everybody coming together with a common goal, a common mindset of doing better in our lives, loving God and loving others, and trying to make sense of all this stuff that's around us. And so as we come together and we do that, you invite someone into that, you invite them into a connection with others that are like-minded in that way, trying to make this world a better place, serving and loving and caring, understanding better who God is and what his role for us is in our life. So it's not even just connecting with each other, but it's helping people connect with their Creator. And so on September 8th, it's not going to be a type of Sunday that if you came and didn't know it was Save a Seat Sunday, would look really any different. There's not going to be like confetti cannons, you know. There's not going to be balloons everywhere. We're not going to do things weird and different than we normally do. It's going to be a Sunday like all other Sundays, other than we're going to be aware that you have brought guests and we're going to do our best we can to honor them in how that day goes, and that you can feel confident that we are going to do our best to make them feel a part of this place. And everyone around here is going to do their best to welcome the friend that you decide to bring. But what of the relationships that you started this week? Or what of the relationships as you go a little bit deeper this week with a few people? Or what relationships are there already in your life where someone is just journeying along but looking for something more than what life has currently offered them? It's not too aggressive to invite someone to church, because most people are hungry and looking for some answer anyways. And I do believe that those answers can be found here, that God will meet them here in that place, and that God brings people here, even when we think it's an invite. I think God knew from the beginning he'd bring them here at that moment. So it can be any Sunday, but we're just choosing that one because right after service, we've got the picnic, right? What better way to do it? And then afterwards, they can connect with you. I mean, all they're going to do is shake a few hands with people. That'll be the connection on Sunday. But then they can go and they can, you know, maybe bring a friend that's really good at beanbags so we can get Pastor Brian. That'd be awesome. But whatever it is, just bring someone that you will that you like and that you enjoy and you want to grow deeper with. At the same point, bring them to meet people that are like-minded and that they'll also have the opportunity to grow in their faith. So September 8th, Save a Seat Sunday, encouraging you, and we'll talk about it more in the days and weeks to come, but we're going to continue talking about this idea of connecting. The handshake last week, we're talking about this whole idea of taking an interest in them, but there's another step that we need to take. We'll talk about that next week as well. Let's pray together. Father God, we thank you for your love and for your grace and for the hope that we can have in you. Lord, we live in a world that doesn't seem to have enough hope to point us in a direction that's meaningful. And that when we focus on ourselves and we focus on all the stuff that the world says, oh, you need to have this and you need to have that, that it feels good in the moment that we purchase it, but there's this emptiness that we feel afterwards. And it just doesn't sustain. It just doesn't last. Lord, that there are these things in our relationships that seem to be the most meaningful, because when life hits us hard, means that we have someone there that will be there through the thick and thin. I guess the real hope we have is knowing that you're that for us, and that you love us regardless of whether we've been far from you, and that you love us whether we've been missing the mark, because we're your creation and we matter to you. So help us to realize that, and realize that there are people in our lives that matter to you, and so they should matter to us. And that just maybe we might be that piece, or we might be that person that you have put in their path and put in their life to be a conduit or just an invitation, so they can come and hear a little bit about what it is that you want for them, and that they can hear that you do love them. Whether that's inviting them to church or inviting them to our small group or inviting them to be around some of our friends that also love you and love others. Help us to take this interest in other people, and that as we do that, that our faith will grow, and that people will come to connect with you as we connect with each other. We thank you for your love and for your grace. In Jesus' name, amen. All right. Well, we invite you back next week as we hit week 3 of this series, but I have some stuff to do this afternoon. I'm going to go see little Miss Squishy, as we're calling her. But God bless you. It was good to have you here today. You're dismissed.